Welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News, a huge Boston Red Sox fan. And by the way, they're off to a 7-3 start. And I co-host the Down the Stretch radio show with Dave Johnson on Sirius XM Radio.
How you guys doing? I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports.
T.D. Thornton checking in from a little north of Boston today. I'm a stablemate of Bill's at Thoroughbred Daily News.
All right, so that's our lineup for this week. Zoe Kamen has the week off, and we'll miss her, of course, and have her back next week. All right, this is the time of year. You know, we have so much to talk about with the big three-year-old preps. This was the last weekend of major preps for the Kentucky Derby. The Lexington is coming up, but that's somewhat of a minor race, though horses might be able to pick up a few points, which could change the equation. Going into this weekend, I thought the Keeneland race, the Bluegrass, was going to be the most important race. And as it turned out, I think that was the way it did turn out. If anybody read my column in the TDN this morning, I raved about Sierra Leone. I thought his race was fantastic. And I think that he, and not Fierceness, is the horse to beat in the Kentucky Derby for a lot of reasons. I was really impressed by his race, but he just looks like a horse that's going to relish the mile and a quarter. He can close. He can come from off the pace. Might be pace dependent. If they go very slow, he'll be have a problem on his hands. But I don't think I'm going to change my mind. I loved his race, and he's my Kentucky Derby pick. Randy, how about you?
Look, I really liked his race, too. He's still lugging in a little bit when he comes down the stretch, but heck, he has such a full head of steam going at that point that it doesn't seem to be any kind of an issue at all. I will say this, the pace of the Bluegrass Stakes absolutely flattered him. Okay. When you look at the major Kentucky Derby preps, I'm talking about those 100 point to the winner preps, the track surface was slower for the Bluegrass Stakes than it was for the Santa Anita Derby, for the Wood Memorial, for the Florida Derby, for the Arkansas Derby. And yet the pace of the Bluegrass Stakes was faster. It was a very, very robust early pace, especially by Keeneland standards at a mile and an eighth. And that did help Sierra Leone, and it did work to the disadvantage of Just a Touch, who is right up there on the pace. You got the sense, and also from post-race comments from Florent Giroux riding Just a Touch, that their strategy was going to be to go out for the lead, thinking they could get a fairly comfortable early lead. But the other Chad Brown horse, Top Connor, came blasting out of there from the inside post position, and the result was a very, very contentious pace. So I think we need to give a little extra credit to Just a Touch when we go forward now to the Kentucky Derby. And I think I'll revise my thinking somewhat, what I said on NBC this past weekend. I think it's really a big four now when you're looking at the Kentucky Derby picture. I think it's Fierceness. I think in no particular order. I think it's Fierceness. I think it's Sierra Leone. I think it's the Japanese horse Forever Young. And I think it's Just a Touch, given the way he ran in the Bluegrass.
And the way that Sierra Leone finished up visually, it certainly sticks out in your mind there. I mean, this was a horse who was a little bit skittish and a little hesitant to load into that outside stall, likely attributable to he was breaking right up against a very energetic opening weekend crowd there, and that kind of caught his attention. But Tyler Gaffleone settled down Sierra Leone, dropped him right onto the rail, and he made that big 5-furlong move that we've seen win derbies in the past. He can unfurl from farther out than anybody else we've seen so far who's a major contender. But Randy, you spoke about the pace. They went fast early. They also finished up very slowly. That final eighth in 13.43 of the nine furlong races that have been run in 2023-24 that award Derby points, that's the slowest final furlong.
Mm. Does anybody want to give another chance to Dornoch after his performance finishing fourth in there? He will go on to the Kentucky Derby. The only thing, I certainly wouldn't pick him in the Derby, and I think this was a disappointing effort from him, but did the idea of we're going to take him off the pace, and take him way back, but on paper, he looked like he should have gone to the front. They experimented. They took him off the pace. It didn't work. Do you give him a mulligan for that? Frankly, I don't want to.
I don't want to either, because if they had sent him, the pace was already very fast. If they had sent him to the lead or tried to get him to the lead, then he would have been burned up. He would have been, you know, another element into the speed duel. They wanted him off the pace in the Florida Derby. And the talk before that was, oh, he would have run much better if we could have gotten him off the pace. Well, we saw what happened when they got him off the pace. He was a little keen down on the inside, didn't seem to be comfortable at any point during the running of the race. And one more thing about the pace of the Bluegrass Stakes. Yeah, you can say, okay, that flattered Sierra Leone. You can say, okay, he's, you know, he may not be quite as good as he looked in that race just because they went so fast early. But then you got to keep in mind, we're talking about this in context of the Kentucky Derby. When is there ever a slow pace in the Kentucky Derby? Almost never. So you know the pace is going to be contentious for Sierra Leone when you get to Churchill Downs. You know he's going to love the mile and a quarter. And Danny Gargan is already talking about trying to send Dornoch to the lead in the Kentucky Derby now that he's found out that he doesn't really relish being behind horses. So that's just going to add another element to what is almost always a fairly robust pace.
But still, given that pace scenario, there's always the danger of falling in love with your Derby horse who's a deep, deep closer, who's either going to have to come around horses in a 20-horse field or weave his way through. Eight of the last 10 horses who crossed the finish wire first in the Derby, and we're not counting the disqualifications in there, the two of them, the eight of the last 10 were either on the lead or just off of it. And horses who did come from off the pace, like Mage and Rich Strike 2 years ago, they both had gift trips just weaving through, you know, everything parted for them. Everything worked out the right way. So there is always that inherent danger of falling in love with the closer as your Derby horse.
As I look at the Florida Derby and as I look forward to the Kentucky Derby, the pace when it comes to fierceness has got to be a huge factor, Didi. I mean, he loped along on the lead in the Florida Derby. You know, granted, it was a great race. He won by 13 and a half lengths, but he got a perfect trip there. He's not going to get that kind of trip in the Kentucky Derby. He may not get a bad trip. He might not get into a speed duel where they go 45 to the half, but I just can't see him duplicating the Florida Derby trip in the Kentucky Derby. And I think that's going to be to his disadvantage.
I would have to agree with you on that. And I think, even to underscore that point a little further, he just closed as the 5-2 favorite in the Derby future pool that closed on Saturday for a race that was still a month away at the time that pool closed. And 5-2 might be a price that in a futures bet that is lower than his actual mutual on Derby day itself.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
How would you like to be taking 2.5-1 on a horse who gets buried down in post one or fanned way out in post 20? We don't know the draw yet. So I think that's an extremely underlaid price on him.
Looking at the past performances, Bill, of the expected Derby starters, based on what they've done so far, there are four horses you can expect to show speed. Track Phantom, who would probably be your most likely pace setter, right? Dornoch, because Danny Gargan says he wants him up there on the pace. Fierceness and Just a Touch. Mm-hmm. Other than that, most of the horses are either, you know, stalkers 3-4 lengths off the pace or mid-pack or further back.
All right. Also at Keeneland, as they opened up their spring stand, of course, was Friday's Ashland Stakes. The only grade one prep for the Kentucky Oaks, where there is four grade one preps for the Kentucky Derby. That's a subject for another day, but maybe a little bit unfair to the ladies. It was a loaded race. It had, I do the top 10 in the Oaks while TD does his rundown for the Kentucky Derby horses. Four of my top 10 horses were in that race. You had Just FYI making her first start since winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the championship last year. You had Impel, who everybody was so high on. But Leslie's Rose, I wouldn't say she was overlooked, but she was a horse that hadn't quite lived up to that billing. She was another seven-figure buy at the sale. So you have the $2.3 million horse win the Bluegrass. I believe she was $1.15 million to win the Ashland. So, you know, the people spending the big money certainly got it right. It was a loaded race. She ran great. I think that she'll be one of the top contenders in the Kentucky Oaks. Just FYI, first race off a long layoff, had to miss a design prep because of a little setback. She certainly could improve. And Impel, third, didn't run badly, but she doesn't have enough points to get into the Kentucky Oaks. So the Impel story is to be written another day, you know, maybe in races like the Alabama or Coaching Club or something like that. Still think she's a high quality filly, but looking at the point situation, I don't see any way she gets into the race.
And, you know, when we talked about Leslie's Rose about a month ago, when she ran a subpar third in the Devona Dale, she was beaten at 3-10 odds. And we had talked on the podcast about how she looked very uncomfortable being buried down at the rail. Well, she got another rail trip on Friday in the Ashland. But this time Irad Ortiz tipped her out three wide rather than coming up the fence. And I was a little shocked that she went off at 9-1 based on that.
I was surprised as well about Leslie's Rose being a 9-1 shot in there, because if you give her that excuse in the Devona Dale and you go back to her previous start, she had a four wide trip. She ran fast. I mean, based on that, you would have to like her about as much as Impel. I thought Impel had a beautiful trip, sitting second just off the hip of the leader in slow fractions. I thought she had no excuse at all. So I was a little bit disappointed in the way she ran. Look, I think Leslie's Rose is a legitimate Kentucky Oaks contender in a race that's really gotten better and better and better as the weeks have progressed. Tarifa ran fast in the Fairgrounds Oaks. Where's My Ring look good in the Gazelle. Power Squeeze looked really good in the Gulfstream Oaks. And Ways and Means, who had a bad trip in that race, is sitting right now at number 15 in the Oaks leaderboard. So you would have to think she'll probably get in. Then you got Torpedo Anna, Leslie's Rose, Just FYI. It's shaping up as a pretty solid Kentucky Oaks. I'm just glad that Zoe's not here this week, because she would be crowing, I think, right now. She and I had a horse-for-horse bet. I did not think Just FYI could win. At least I was right about that. But we went horse-for-horse, Just FYI versus Impel. She beat me by 3/4 of a length. There's alcohol involved in there. I've got to buy her some sort of... Knowing Zoe, she'll probably go for Opus One, but I'm hoping it's a little bit more reasonable.
Yes, so you will be hitting the local liquor stores to buy Ms. Cadman a very nice gift, and she was adamant. I mean, the horse didn't win, but she was not taking any, not swallowing the Kool-Aid on Impel, not at all. So anyway, so that wraps up the big weekend of racing at Keeneland. And speaking of Keeneland, we want to let you know that the TDN Riders Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland Spring Meet is in full swing. Action will pick up again this week on Wednesday, April 10th. The spring meet concludes on April 26th, which is also the date of the April Selected Horses of Racing Age sale. Entries for the September yearling sale are now open. The sale will start Monday, September 9, and the entry deadline is May 1. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
When the spring meet ends, summer success begins. Buy, sell, fresh winners, hot prospects. One night, one chance. Finish strong. Don't miss out. The Keeneland April Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale. Friday, April 26th.
This week on the TDN Writers Room, we welcome a new advertiser, Pleasant Acre Stallions in Ocala, Florida, a 400-acre property which is home to 13 stallions, including Simplification. You'll remember Simplification is the winner of the Grade 2 Fountain of Youth and Mucho Macho Man Stakes at Gulfstream. From the immediate family of multiple Grade 1 winner and champion Ashado, Simplification was third in the Grade 1 Florida Derby and fourth in the Kentucky Derby. He is the son of Not This Time, who stands in Kentucky for $150,000. You can breed to Simplification for just $6,500. TD, what do you remember about Simplification's racing career?
I'll tell you, I do remember something about him. I had him pegged as about a 15-1 shot in the Kentucky Derby off of his Florida prep races. And I just remember him going off at an astronomically higher price. He was 35-1. And that was a case where sometimes you bet the horse, sometimes you bet the price. And even though he was about fourth or fifth down on my list of contenders, I jumped in with both fists and backed him at 35-1. He was 15th in the Derby, came with a big four wide move around the turn. He was in it to win it at the eighth pole, but just didn't have that spark. And I guess I had the wrong long shot, because that was the year that Rich Strike won at 80-1.
Meanwhile, the Fastest Horse of the Week segment brought to you again by one of the fast sires at Windstar Farm, the only stallion at Windstar, actually the only stallion in the world who is a son of the Red Hot Constitution and as a racehorse was precocious enough to be undefeated as a two-year-old. That would be Independence Hall as a two-year-old. He won both his starts, including the Grade 3 Nashua Stakes by a combined 17 and a half lengths. Then he added a win on New Year's Day in the Jerome and Aqueduct. He got a 101 buyer in the Nashua, the highest that year for any two-year-old. And he came back as a four-year-old to run a 105 buyer, winning the Grade 2 Fayette at Keeneland. Independence Hall has his first yearlings this year, and he stands at Windstar for $10,000. Fastest Horse of the Week came courtesy of a Thursday allowance race, a sprint at Aqueduct, and that would be Joey Freshwater, four-year-old son of Jimmy Creed, trained by Linda Rice, who was eligible for the non-winners of three other than condition, scored by 3 3/4 lengths under Jose Lescano, 6 furlongs, 109.57 seconds. Joey Freshwater, a sometimes anxious and quirky colt, best known for winning the Grade 3 Bay Shore Stakes almost exactly a year ago at Aqueduct. That was four races after he was claimed for $50,000 as a two-year-old by Winning Move Stables. Steve Sigler, Joey Freshwater, clicking on all cylinders last week, career high buyer speed figure of 105. One more thing briefly. Last week, I mentioned my trivia question. We were talking about fierceness in his 110 buyer speed figure in the Florida Derby. And remember, I asked when the last time any horse in the field of the Kentucky Derby had run a career high buyer speed figure as high as 110. I said we'd have the answer at the end of the show. I forgot. So I've given you a whole week to think about it. The correct answer would be another horse trained by Todd Pletcher, ridden by John Velasquez in the Florida Derby, and that would be Materiality, who won the 2015 Florida Derby with a 110 buyer speed figure, then got in trouble at the start in American Pharoah's Kentucky Derby and ran sixth.
Could not have come up with that one in a million years. My goodness. Old rabbit hole Randy strikes again. All right. So let's turn our attention to the other two big three-year-old prep races for the Kentucky Derby. The Wood Memorial. This is a race that's fallen on hard times. There's no couching that. It's now a Grade 2. No horse has won the Wood Memorial and come back to win the Kentucky Derby since Fusace Pegasus in 2000, and I don't think any of that is going to change this year. I think because it's a Grade 2, now that's really hurt it, because you have all these other Grade 1 options. Why would people want to run in a Grade 2 when there's all these other, again, options out there? But the race was won by Resilience, and to me, part of the story will take me back to one of the reasons why I like Sierra Leone so much. Resilience was fourth in the Risen Star, beaten by Sierra Leone. He comes back off that key race and gets into the winner's circle in a, you know, a watered down Wood Memorial. Deterministic, didn't run a step. I don't know what happened there. How about Danny Gargan? He's got Doorknock. He's also got Society Man, who at 106-1 ran second to earn some points to get into the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, I think that'll tell you pretty much, I think, what you need to know about the Wood Memorial. It was not a particularly strong race. Resilience ran a good race, and he was clearly the best horse in the race. But looking ahead to the Kentucky Derby, he'll probably be 15 or 20 to 1. The runner-up was 106 to 1. The third-place horse was 38 to 1. The fourth-place horse was 80 to 1. No horse has come out of the Wood Memorial to win the Kentucky Derby since Funny Side, who was second to Empire Maker in the Wood and won the Kentucky Derby 21 years ago, way back in 2003.
I would love to see the Wood Memorial take a bold step and go to 3 weeks out from the Kentucky Derby. It might get it out of those Grade 2 doldrums. It is kind of the weak sister of the three races that are on that first Saturday in April, among the Bluegrass Stakes, the Santa Anita Derby, and the Wood. I think if you move it to 3 weeks out, you give trainers and owners a chance to pick up some points. It'll draw 14 horses every year if you run it 3 weeks out, and maybe the quality will improve as well.
Actually, that's, I think that's a great idea, TD. And I, one other thing I want, again, as I'm now the president of the Sierra Leone Fan Club, also coming out of the the Risen Star Stakes was Catching Freedom, who was third, and he won the Louisiana Derby. So right now, the Risen Star is a serious key race with Sierra Leone getting the job done. All right, Santa Anita, you know, it's go to the Santa Anita Derby. The whole situation in California is so discombobulated because of the Bob Baffert factor. I think it had looked at one time that maybe you would not get a single Southern California horse into the Kentucky Derby because Baffert had them all, and they're barring a big win in court, he was not going to be able to get his horses into the Derby. Stronghold, he outgame Imagination. Phil D'Amato, who is another guy who, like Chad Brown, specializes in grass racing, but he got this horse into the Kentucky Derby with a nice win in the Santa Anita Derby. But Stronghold will not be somebody on my tickets come Derby Day.
Yeah, this is a horse who has paired 89 buyer speed figures in his last two tries. He won the Sunland Derby. He won the Santa Anita Derby. In both of those races, he made the lead, then gave it up and had to reclaim the lead. While I do like to see some new blood and new connections in the Derby, I think Imagination, the runner-up, actually ran the better race of the two. He was up close to a fairly brisk pace. He went after the leader on the far turn, and he engaged in yet another, for Imagination, length of the stretch duel. He's had three of them in a row. He won one of them, the San Felipe. The other two, he's only lost by a neck.
We've all become familiar over our decades as handicappers with horses that don't want to separate from the field, that don't want to run away from other horses. They just want to hang right there. And they'll run down to the level of their competition, as Imagination did in a maiden race when he was beaten in a photo finish, or they'll run up to the level of their competition, like he did when he was going head-and-head with May Moon a couple of races back in that allowance race. He's just kind of the hanging sort of horse that doesn't want to run away from his competition. He had a beautiful trip coming to the top of the stretch. Looked like he was going to kick away and win nicely. He got away from the field just for a second, and then he sort of waited on horses. Stronghold went by him. He picked it up again. I think Imagination is a better horse probably. But, I mean, look, Stronghold's going to be 25-30-1 in the Kentucky Derby, I think. So, even though he's won two races in a row, he's not a major player in my eyes at this point.
Another slow fourth quarter in a race that was, in fact, they went just 0.02 of a second shy of going that final quarter split in the race in 26 seconds. They went 25.98. That is the slowest fourth quarter of a 9-furlong prep race this season. So they didn't finish up all that swiftly.
TD and Riders Room, also brought to you by the PHBA, the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. Here's a Pennsylvania Breeders Alert. April 30th is the deadline to nominate your 2-year-old Pennsylvania sired, Pennsylvania bred to that Stallion Series for 24-20-25 at the $500 fee. The price will go up after that. That upcoming series will consist of two stakes races on each of three race days for the final of the three in the series. It'll be held in early 2025 for the first time for 3-year-old colts and 3-year-old fillies. Breeders are eligible for $50,000 in bonuses in that series. For more information, you can visit www.pabred.com.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide a lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late hits a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a 3-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Maximum Security proves he's the real deal with a gate-to-wire win in the Florida Derby.
Champion 3-year-old.
Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
11 triple-digit buyers.
Maximum Security, he smoked them in the cigar mile.
Grade 1 winning 4-year-old.
Maximum Security takes them all the way in the TVG Pacific Classic.
Maximum Security.
Now it's time for the Coolmore Stallion of the Week. And this week, that is Maximum Security. Maxim Security's first two-year-olds are selling at OBS April next week. Just a reminder of what kind of racehorse he was. Maxim Security was the champion three-year-old colt in the USA in 2019, a grade one winner at four, a winner of his only two-year-old start by 9 3/4 lengths, first past the post in five grade ones, the Cigar Mile, Florida Derby, Haskell, Kentucky Derby, and the Pacific Classic. All in all, he racked up 11 triple-digit buyer numbers in 14 starts and won over distances from 6 to 10 furlongs. Maxim Security stands a cool more for a fee of $7,500.
Green Group Guest of the Week is brought to you by the Green Group. We're taping this on Monday, April 8th. It's getting close to tax time, especially if you're in the thoroughbred industry and you're struggling with something right now, when you're right up against the deadline about your taxes. It's not too late to reach out to Lynn Green and Company at the Green Group. You can go to www.greenco.com for more information.
We're pleased now to bring in the Green Group Guest of the Week, and it's a good one this week. The man of the hour over the weekend, Chad Brown, was winning races all up and down the map, but most importantly, of course, Sierra Leone winning the Bluegrass, the Toyota Bluegrass for Chad Brown. And Chad, as we start this off, I was just kind of wondering what your mentality is, because I think some people feel that since you're so grass-oriented, that maybe the Kentucky Derby isn't all that big a deal to you. I'm sure it is, though, but could you explain that, you know, how much the Derby means to you and why, you know, you don't necessarily go about it the same way, say, Todd Pletcher and Bob Baffert do?
It's a high priority for us, a race we want to win. You know, it's one of the few races we haven't won yet, me and my team. And, I'm not sure what their approach really is. I just think I have maybe a different portfolio of horses to work with, as young horses and such, a lot of turf horses, a lot of fillies and stuff. So we definitely don't have as many candidates right off the bat. I mean, I have a lot of nice horses to work with, don't get me wrong, but dirt colts that can get the classic distances, you know, they sort of whittle themselves down pretty quick when you're going through your babies. So fortunately this year I have some really good candidates, and it looks like two of them are going to get into the Derby. So
yeah, and this group, this portfolio includes the $2.3 million horse in Sierra Leone. I find it interesting, sort of the power coupling of Peter Brandt and Coolmore. I know Peter's been developing a relationship over the past decade or so with John Magner and with MV Magner. They both bought into Jack Christopher. Yeah, Peter bought into Stone Age. But from what I understand, from what I've read, this particular colt, Sierra Leone, had quite the reputation with bloodstock agents even before he went through the sales ring. Can you kind of talk a little bit about how and why the partnership in this particular horse between Peter and Coolmore came to be?
Well, we're at Saratoga, actually, and they, you know, the Coolmore team's, you know, looking at all the yearlings and such and getting on their short list what they want. And Peter was looking to get a nice colt or two out of that sale. So, you know, we do our work and then sort of match notes. And this is a horse that I really liked, Peter really liked, and it was a horse they liked too, one of a few they liked. So this was the one that we really wanted to be involved in. And at that sale, this is the only one that Peter did go in on. And he happened to be the most expensive. You know, before they sell, you don't really know. There were a few nice prospects in there. We didn't know he'd bring, you know, over $2 million, but this was really the top pick by a lot of people, including us. And, you know, it doesn't work out that way with yearlings, as you know. They change a lot. There's a lot of high dollar horses that are slow or, you know, don't have much ability and such. So you don't really know. This horse is one of those rare horses that was always a beautiful horse, probably since birth, you'd have to imagine, and always a star. You know, impeccably bred. I mean, grade one winner on top and bottom, and never missed a beat, was never not at the top of everyone's list. From a yearling, from when the horse was at the farm with all the other two-year-olds, he came into our barn, he was always the best one. So, you know, it's just, you got to go through a lot of horses to find one that's always is at the head of the class at every grade.
So at that Saratoga sale, as the price kept going higher and higher, do you know who you were primarily bidding against at that point?
I wasn't involved with the bidding. So once we talk about it with Peter and the Coolmore group, you know, they take it from there with Paul Shanahan and MV, whoever else is involved. And then you know, I'm not involved in any of the bidding or the appraisal of the horse. They just decide at that point that they, you know, they want to pursue that horse and get him for that price. And well, I'm just a lucky recipient that then, you know, they did, they told me right away I was going to get the horse. So it was a very, great result for me. And he was immediately earmarked for me, which I was appreciative.
Chad, we talked earlier in the show before you came on about the Bluegrass Stakes, but, forget our assessments. We want to hear it straight from the trainer's mouth. What did you think of the Bluegrass, and how did Sierra Leone come out of it?
Yeah, it came out of the race fine. You know, obviously when he drew the outside post there, he was always going to look like he was going to be towards the rear of the field, but particularly with that post, you're just going to have to guide him over there and see if the pace develops. I was a little surprised to see Top Connor on the lead. He broke so sharp, and from the inside post, our intent was to go be in that first group there. I actually thought Good Money would be maybe right there, setting the pace, maybe just ahead of him. That horse actually charged, hit the gate. He was the horse when Sierra Leone didn't really want to load. Then he finally got in there. A horse charged the gate in the middle. It was Good Money, but then hit the gate, Castellano told me. And then he was out of sorts a bit after that and really didn't run any good. Didn't break well, didn't run good. But anyhow, my other horse ended up on the lead, which I didn't anticipate. But, you know, as the pace was moving along at a solid rate and I saw the horse moving up down the backside, I felt pretty good. The only anxious moment was when he was loading the gate. When he didn't want to go in, that was, I didn't see that coming. He's been a pretty straightforward horse. Tyler told me really the crowd, you know, when he inherited the outside post with the 11 scratching, he's the last one to load in there. The more they were just trying to get him in there and they did a great job getting him in there. He just kept looking at that crowd, and it's been something with this horse. He always kind of wants to look right. You know, you saw in the Remsen when he was kind of acting green, and he still wants to lean in a little bit when he passed that horse on Saturday. And then right where that gate is, where all the huge crowd is right there, Tyler said, as soon as he locked eyes on all of them and the noise and such, that's really why he didn't want to go in.
Chad, you've run a lot of good horses in the Kentucky Derby, most notably Good Magic and Zandon. You have not, as we've mentioned, been fortunate enough to win yet. But is this your best shot yet to date in your career? Are you going to go into this with even more confidence than you might have gone into Good Magic's Derby?
Yeah, I do. I think he's the best chance. I mean, with Good Magic, you bring in the two-year-old champion horse. He's with him and Zandon, they were sort of both battling for favoritism with one other really good horse, you know, Justify 1 year in Epicenter the other year. And with Good Magic, there was always a question mark if he really wanted to go a mile and a quarter. He's coming off a good Bluegrass win. His numbers looked good. And that crop didn't look that strong behind, you know, up-and-coming Justify, Good Magic. And then there were some other horses that didn't, maybe it wasn't as deep, I don't feel. And so I thought maybe he'd get a mile and a quarter just because of the lack of competition, maybe. But it's not really what he wanted to do. And then with Zandon, I always felt he could get the mile and a quarter. And I felt really, really good about that horse, the way he came in with his running style. And he got both of them got pretty good trips in the Derby, too. No excuses. But this horse really looks like he's looking for the mile and a quarter the right way. Yes, he's trip dependent. He's going to have to pass a lot of horses. But it looks like there'll be a good pace. And hopefully, if he can just get a clear run and use his big stride, he would be the best chance we've had in this race.
So about that, when I hear people hand-wringing about 20 horse field in the Derby, and oh, it's a crapshoot, and oh, you gotta have this much luck, I always tell them, go back and look at the charts, you know, in hindsight who the best horse was. Ask yourself, look, go back every year, go back to the 70s, did the best horse win the Kentucky Derby? And you'll be amazed. It's like 75-80% of the time, despite the 20 horse field, the cream rises and the best horse tends to win. So how concerned are you about his running style going into a 20 horse field?
You know, it's I'm slightly concerned, because anytime you can get some position in that race and put some horses behind you, you're definitely going to have a better chance to get a clean trip. That said, you know, there's been some, you know, you look last year, I mean, the winner was really towards the rear in the race and did get a great trip and everything went right there. Javier did a great job riding the horse, but you know, you go through the years and there's been a lot of closers that have done really well in the race. So, it does come down to a little bit of luck. I agree with you. I'd say 8 times out of 10, when you look at the really top contenders in the race, they really didn't have an excuse. I can think of a couple derbies where the horses were a bit unlucky, didn't have good trips. I don't know if it was because it was 20 horses. They could have had a bad trip in a 14 horse field too. You know, I thought Essential Quality didn't get a good trip. And I'm a student of the game. I've been in some of these races. I was in that one. Was highly motivated. I thought he had a pretty wide trip. Maybe it's because of the 20 horses. I thought he might have been the best horse. I thought Looking at Lucky had a bad post that year. He was a horse that I thought got affected. He might have been best. So there's a couple of them, but in large, like my horses that I thought I had the best chance with, they didn't have any excuse. I mean, they got through just fine. Good Magic and Zandon. And I had some other horses that I really haven't had any bad trips in there, knock on wood. So you just have to come with the right horse.
And you will have another deep closer in the Derby, Domestic Product, the winner of the Tampa Bay Derby. He's coming off of two races in which he closed into some pretty slow paces. Give us your thumbnail sketch of Domestic Product, and please tell us if you know what you're going to do with a jockey, because Tyler Gaffalione rides Sierra Leone, and he's also been riding Domestic Product.
Yeah, so we're lucky enough to pick up Irad Ortiz on that horse, so he's going to ride the Derby, which is great. And, that horse is, I think, an under-the-radar real contender in the race. He has a really fast figure at a mile and eighth as a two-year-old to keep working off of when he broke his maiden. I mean, he did something that's hard to do. I ran him at Saratoga. We really liked the horse going six furlongs. And Brad Rodeman just said the kickback, and he couldn't believe he didn't fire because he had worked him in the morning, and he begged me to ride the horse, Brad. So he missed the race going a mile. And then by the time I had him ready to go, there was a mile and an eighth race going from six to a mile and eighth. I'd never do that. So I just threw him in there, and didn't he win? And he ran a good, fast number. And then he caught that muddy track in the Remsen. He clearly doesn't want a rainy derby, this horse. He's night and day better on a dry track. And I'll say this about him. When Tyler got off that horse at Tampa, we talked about how, now we're going to part ways with this horse a bit, and you're going to, obviously pick the other horse, but, thank you. And maybe down the road, you guys can connect again. He said to me, he's not that far behind the other horse. Trust me. The horse going a mile and a quarter. There's not as much separating these horses as you think, is what he told me. I said, okay. So I trust him. He's been going in some slow paces. We haven't seen him at a mile and a quarter yet. I think taking the blinkers off the horse was a positive move for him in his last two starts. And I initially was going to run that horse again. And the more I looked at it, he had two tough races at a mile 16th, but he was really on his belly late in the race. And I thought he had a good blow out of it. And I looked at my numbers, over my whole career, and really 31 to 60 days. I know there's a lot of turf races in there too, but it's been a high percentage move for us, having a little bit of time, 31 to 60. If it was more than 60 days, I would have definitely run that horse somewhere. But he's just 56, 57 days, something like that. And it's a positive angle for our barn, so I'm going to go on that.
Chad, what do you think the next 4 weeks are going to be like for you? You're going to be nervous? You're going to be extra excited? Case of Derby fever? Or, are you going to be the typical Chad Brown, level-headed, kind of steady guy that we know and love?
Thank you. Thank you. I try to be. The only benefit to losing the Derby a few times when you thought you were going to win is you gain a lot of experience, and the next one that comes along, you don't get thinking about it too much. You just you hope for the best. You're expecting the worst. Anything can happen, of course. So you just have to think about it that way. And it'll be pretty anxious on Derby Day, but we're pretty focused, and I have a great team. I mean, I was telling the reporters here on site to the Bluegrass. I mean, to put in perspective, there's three Bluegrass wins, and every single employee that was here on Saturday was working for me at the first one. Every worker in the barn. So that's the same team that's working with these horses. So we all have a lot of experience together doing this, and I'm hoping that benefits us as we go in there. It's tough to make decisions. The last weather to deal with in Kentucky all the time, when you're going to work the horses, and how you're going to approach the race and such. And I feel like we learn something every year.
We've had a lot of conversations. This is something I can't believe I've never asked you before. And with all your turf success, you've won more than your share of grade one races on the dirt. You've won the Preakness twice. You were second in the Kentucky Derby. Looking at the difference between dirt racing and turf racing, right? it's a lot more strenuous to run on the dirt, obviously, and slog through the sand than it is to run on the grass. Knowing that, do you have to train dirt horses differently for a race like a mile and a quarter Kentucky Derby than you would a turf horse? You have to train them harder to get them fitter to run on dirt than you would on turf.
Yeah, certainly. You definitely, the horses can take a lot more that run on the dirt, especially the top ones. And you certainly train those horses harder. And you're right, running through sand basically is what you're doing is no different from a human to a horse. You know, you can feel the difference running on your lawn versus the beach. And it's very similar with horses, I find. And certainly you train them harder. And with the turf horses, there's definitely an element of fitness for the horse, but you're teaching the horse a lot more behavioral training, in my experience. You know, it's, you know, how to conserve energy, when to use it. You know, you want the horses a little more push button to show their turn of foot. If they have it, you sort of develop them to use it as a weapon. With dirt racing and training, I find it's really a test of stamina. You know, you don't get as many bad trips, right? There's a lot more separation in the races as horses get tired. And that has to do with what you said about the endurance required for running long distances in sand, basically. It's just a different approach. And I don't know that the behavior of the horse, it really matters as much because you're not so trip dependent.
Very good. Well, Chad Brown, thanks so much for spending some time with us, being the Green Group Guest of the Week. Best of luck going forward as you look to try to win the Kentucky Derby with Sierra Leone and Domestic Product. Once again, Chad, thanks so much. Good luck Derby Day.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
As our Green Group Guest of the Week, Chad Brown will receive a free one-hour tax consultation from the Green Group. For more information on how the Green Group can save you money on those upcoming taxes, www.greenco.com.
Are you paying too much in taxes? The Green Group can help. There's a reason the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisors. They save you money and share successful strategies. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport, like Eclipse Award-winning champions Jaywalk and Wonder Wheel. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100. Or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TD and Riders Room brought to you by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Association and the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. What have Kentucky breds been doing in the last couple of weeks? You know, let's see. Laurel River won the Dubai World Cup. Tuz One won the Golden Shaheen. Muth won the Arkansas Derby. Fierceness won the Florida Derby. This past weekend, Sierra Leone won the Bluegrass. Leslie's Rose the Ashland. Alva Star the Madison. Stronghold won the Santa Anita Derby. But it's like this every week with Kentucky breds, right? Kentucky breds, buy them, raise them, race them, and we all win. Now, speaking of Kentucky breds, at Pleasant Acres Farm in Ocala, they're standing Doppelganger, a grade one winning son of Into Mischief in his first year at stud in 2024. He is a Kentucky bred. He was a TD and Rising Star on his debut at Los Al. He's out of a stakes winning multiple graded stakes place, daughter of Quiet American. Doppelganger was second in the San Felipe on the Triple Crown Trail as a 3-year-old. Later on, he won the Carter at 4. So do the math. He was a winner as a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 4-year-old. Right now, Sons of Into Mischief, like Doppelganger, very popular at stud. 5 of them stand in the state of Florida right now, 3 of them at Pleasant Acres, and Doppelganger, the only grade 1 winner among those 5.
And Doppelganger stands for $10,000 at Pleasant Acres. So let's go to some of the off-track news that we had, and I'll start with TD on this one because he's covering the story for the Thoroughbred Daily News. And keep in mind, we're recording this on Monday, so you know, the news could and probably will change from the time we recorded this until it appears. So we apologize for that. We'll do the best we can, but we have to talk about this because there's important stories. So we thought we'd seen the last of the lawsuits. You know, there's been 116 of them. And, you know, we thought finally everything was dealt with. And Churchill Downs, whether you agree with their position or not, was by and large the winner of everything. Now Amsterdam has gone to court to try to get a temporary injunction that would allow Muth to get into the Kentucky Derby. And TD, what is he arguing, first of all?
He's essentially, his legal argument boils down to Churchill Downs Incorporated did not have the right to extend Bob Baffert's suspension from running on their grounds and in the Kentucky Derby. And he's saying that based on what he thought was the end of the suspension for Mr. Baffert back last summer, that he would buy horses that would thus be eligible to run in the 2024 Kentucky Derby. So he's making that argument. This was already, you know, we had written in Thoroughbred Daily News as far back as 2 years ago that some owner might try a lawsuit beyond the failed federal lawsuit that Bob Baffert initiated that was decided last year. And sure enough, Amir Zaidan has gone to court. He's gone to a Kentucky state court, which is an important distinction because the case has already been decided at the federal level. Remember, to get a judge to grant an injunction is, in some sense, it's a wild card. You get the right judge, you make the right argument on the right day, and you just need the injunction to get into the Derby. You might not even need to win the overall case. We're taping this again without the knowledge of what happens at today's hearing. That's probably occurring as we speak. However, my guess is that it's going to be just a procedural event, and I think eventually Churchill Downs will try to move this question to a federal court because they can say, hey, we already have a precedent on something that's almost a very similar type of argument.
Yeah, I mean, as the three of us all know, there have been quite a few lawsuits that have gone through the legal system in Kentucky pertaining to Medina Spirit's disqualification and Baffert's suspension, and they have yet to win in that level in Kentucky in any of those court filings. Like TD, I read all 80 pages of this court filing. And to me, this is a much more compelling case than any that they've had before. Because what they're doing basically is they're using Churchill Downs' own words against them. They've got the original press release from Churchill Downs about the 2-year suspension. They've got a conversation between Bill Carstangen and Mike Tirico on NBC. They've got a recording of that in which Carstangen said that if Baffert was free of any additional medication violations after his 2-year suspension was up, he would be welcomed back to Churchill Downs if he wanted to run there. And Zaidan is claiming that because of those words and because he wants Bob Baffert to train his horses at the Derby, he went out and spent $10 million on horses that would be 3-year-olds this year based on the words of Churchill Downs. Now, to me, that's a pretty compelling case. But the big problem here is the timing. When you read that 80-page filing, it's extremely detailed. That's why it's 80 pages. They didn't just start on this after Muth won the Arkansas Derby. This is something that's got to take a month or more to piece together. Now, maybe they only filed it when Muth won the Arkansas Derby, was going to have enough points for sure to get in Kentucky, and he came back okay after the race. But now look at the timing. If the procedural hearing is today, then they set a further hearing, and then the judge has to rule, where are we going to be in relation to the Kentucky Derby? And remember, last year, Baffert sued about the 2-year suspension. He lost the suit. One part of the rationale, according to the judge, for denying Baffert's claim that he shouldn't be suspended for 2 years is that it would put a hardship on other owners whose horses had points to get in the Kentucky Derby and might be bumped. And this was February of 2023. Now we're looking at April of 2024, 2-3 weeks eventually before the Kentucky Derby. I just think it's going to be awfully tough to get a judge to throw the Kentucky Derby in that kind of disarray that close to the race. We'll see.
And another element of the lawsuit is that Mr. Zeidan is arguing that Churchill Downs Incorporated is in violation of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. They allege that on at least three occasions in the lawsuit. On Friday, I got in touch with somebody from the HISA Authority to ask what their opinion or comment was on that. Is CDI really in violation of HISA? And the HISA Authority didn't want any part of that. They said, we're not going to comment on anything that's in a different lawsuit that doesn't involve us. And they probably wouldn't comment even if the lawsuit did directly involve them. So, you know, if CDI was in violation, you would think that violation would be posted on the HISA website.
TD, if Zeidan wins this, can only his horse get into the Kentucky Derby, or can horses owned by other Baffert owners? Randy, you're shaking your head to fill me in.
No. I mean, TD will tell you this has to do with Baffert's suspension. So it not only would open the door for Muth, it would open the door for Imagination or any other horse that Baffert might have that has points that they may want to run. You agree with that, TD?
I do. And I would say, and it's not just the Derby, it's the Kentucky Oaks as well.
Good point.
All right. Well, speaking of Churchill Downs, they were also in the news last week, and a very odd story. A publication called the Baltimore Banner, who, by the way, does a real good job covering politics in Maryland and has written a lot of been on top of the Pimlico situation ever since the things have been going on and the going back and forth about getting money for Pimlico, rebuilding it, et cetera, that Churchill Downs was interested in buying Pimlico. And I mean, if I didn't know better, I would have thought this was an April Fool's joke. And the thing is, which I the reason why I don't see this at all is that we know what Churchill Downs is all about. Well, they love the Kentucky Derby. But other than that, they're not real good fans of horse racing. They're a casino company, and they're going to go out and buy a racetrack that has no affiliation or no revenue coming in from slot machines, casinos, et cetera. That goes so totally against the grain of the way they've run their company. Now, perhaps they think that they could get maybe historical horse racing machines in there or something. But I don't get it, to be honest with you. I know the Preakness is a big feather in their cap, and they would have 2/3 of the Triple Crown, which would be pretty remarkable. But, you know, maybe they're just kicking the tires. I don't get it.
I don't think Churchill Downs has any interest in having 2/3 of the Triple Crown. You know, they don't have that much interaction with the Preakness and with First Racing. I mean, let's face it, when it comes to the Triple Crown, Churchill Downs is flying the plane and Pimlico and the Belmont are in middle seat in coach, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. That's the way the pecking order goes. So why would Churchill Downs want to take a dilapidated Pimlico under its umbrella? But you answered it. It's the possibility of HHR, of historical horse racing machines. Right now, the state of Maryland has 6 casinos, and racetracks have tried for a long time to get expanded gaming at the tracks. They've always been denied, but in exchange, legislators have given racing in Maryland a carve out. They've taken some of the tax revenue that would go to the state, and they've instead given it to the horsemen for purses and given it to the racetracks for some sort of capital improvements that obviously aren't being used at Pimlico. So I think what Churchill Downs is hoping, and this is just speculation, is that they can go to the Maryland legislature and they can say, look, you're about to spend $400 million on this. Okay. We can save you a whole lot of money. Let us take over Maryland Racing. Let us take Pimlico. Let us take Laurel. You don't have to worry about that $400 million. Right. We'll take care of what we need to take care of. Just give us the opportunity, at least give us the consideration for installing HHR machines at our racetracks, and we'll take care of the rest. I think you're right. I think that's pretty much what they're interested in long term. I don't think they give a flip about controlling 2/3 of the Triple Crown.
And if you're a horseman in Maryland, you face the decision of who do you want running the sport in your state for the long-term future, a gaming company, or as the way the bill is going through the legislature now, a nonprofit racing-specific entity similar to the New York Racing Association that is going to have racing interests first and foremost for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, stay tuned on that one. And again, there may be some more information out about this this week. We apologize if we miss that, but we are recording this in advance of some of the meetings in Maryland.
Yeah, and that's important, Bill, because as we tape this on Monday, April 8th, today is the final day of the legislative session for the year in Annapolis. So when you watch this on TDN, there will be more news about this, but this is what we think about it right now ahead of time.
All right. Well, last but certainly not least, Frankie Dettori. My goodness, the story just gets better and better all the time. On Santa Anita Derby Day, he rode the favorite in the Santa Anita Derby and didn't win in imagination, but he rode six straight winners in consecutive races from the second through the seventh. And usually when you see something like that happen with a jockey, which you don't see very often, yeah, there's a $320 winner in there and a $4 winner and whatnot. His horses paid $660, $1820, $2160, $15, $16.40, and $1080. And if you would have gone to Santa Anita that day and say, I'm going to parlay all of Frankie's horses because I think he's going to have a hot day, a $2 parlay for those added up to $215,416 just goes to show you the odds against something like this happens. Randy, I know you've been just so impressed with what he's been doing out in California, how good he looks on a horse. And it's amazing to think that he was going to retire. And now he's, you know, enjoying the second chapter in his career, riding winners like crazy, riding in the U.S. I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon, and nor should he.
And he's having an absolute blast, right? He's 53 years old. He's the best jockey in Southern California. He is. He looks better on the horse than anyone else, better than the young guys. He's getting better results than any other jockey out there with the horses he's been riding. It's just remarkable what he's been doing in Southern California. But given his career, I guess it shouldn't really come as a surprise to anybody.
And when he lost the seventh race that he would have won by a neck on imagination, when he lost the Santa Anita Derby, he was the very first person in the winner's circle. Did you see him get in there to enthusiastically go in and shake the hand of fellow jockey Antonio Fraso? So he's a pretty sporting guy as well.
Yeah. Earlier today in Australia, the first foal of the legendary Winx, a filly. Winx won 33 races in a row. The foal is a filly. Went through the Inglis Easter yearling sale down there. Bred to a stallion of Coolmore's that's hot in Australia named Piero. And a bidding war ensued. One of the bidders was the co-owner of the filly in the ring, who said she hadn't really planned on bidding, but decided once she got there that she had to have her filly and keep her in Australia. Her name is Debbie Kepitas. The bidding kept going and going and going and going. And guess who was bidding against Debbie Kepitas? John Stewart of Resolute Racing in Kentucky. We've had him on the podcast. The guy that says he doesn't bid, he buys. Well, the bidding escalated all the way to $10 million in Australian dollars. Stewart lost out to Debbie Kepitas, who will get to keep the filly out of Winx for a U.S. price of $6.5 million, the highest price ever paid at auction in the world for a yearling filly. Out of Winx.
And we will look forward to seeing her on the racetrack in a couple of years. We also want to remind you that the TDN Riders Room is brought to you by XBTV. The XBTV Work of the Week is Sweet Azteca. She is the gray horse here in the black cap, working in company with three others. She will come from the middle of the pack and hit the wire first, working an easy four furlongs in 47.60. Sweet Azteca won the Grade 1 Beholder Mile at Santa Anita on March 9th for trainer Michael McCarthy and is being pointed for the Derby City Distaff, also a Grade 1 race, run on Saturday, May 4th, Kentucky Derby Day at Churchill Downs. We'll be right back after this message from XBTV.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The TD and Riders Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. We talk all the time about how being a part of a West Point partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie. We talk about their winners all the time. Hey, West Point's just like us. They can have tough beats as well. Just this past week in the Transylvania, Cugino was second by a nose. That's a grade three race. In the Madison, they had Vava in there. She ran a heck of a race, and she was beaten just a half length. So they don't win them all. This week, West Point will have Integration going in the grade one Maker's Mark Mile at Keeneland. Also, that's on Friday. Saturday at Oakland, Jackson Traveler is back in action again in the grade three Count Fleet Sprint Handicap. You can learn more about all things West Point at westpointtb.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank my partners, Randy Moss and T.D. Thornton, who admirably filled in for Zoe Cabman this week. Our producers, Katie Petruniak and Anthony LaRocca. Our editors, Leo LaRocca and Nathan Wilkinson. And of course, what would our show be without our mascot, Lucy?
Sound asleep, as always.
Sound asleep. Yeah, she's as frisky as ever today. So anyways, everybody, should be a great weekend of racing. Thanks for tuning us in, and we'll catch up with you next week here on the TDN Writers Room Podcast. Mm-hmm.